Evening, one and all. I know, Wednesday, halfway through another one. And here I am, Barry, with another book and a chat. Well, over the last few months, a bit longer than that, I think, but people have been re-releasing a program that I used to watch for decades. I think it was decades. It was definitely years and years, because I'm up to season 15 at the moment, looking to the rerun. So I reckon that. And it's a program that we used to have in England called Time Team, where Tony Robinson introduced it, who was in Blackadder, played Baldrick in Blackadder and several other bits and pieces. But he's very good introducing it. And they had three days to dig, do some historical investigation, you know, some being in England, you know, we have Roman villas about every half mile sort of thing. So, you know, digging all that stuff and Saxon and everything they can, all these fine things. And it's really interesting. And I've been binge watching YouTube, I must admit, for the last month going through it all, because I like all that stuff. And you know that, because you know, when we have Steve Berry on the show, we always chat about the sort of historical stuff that he sort of picks a story, he goes into it a bit and then sort of massages it into sort of story, like, you know, like could well be happening today, so can find out. Well, my guest, who is half of the people who created this story, because it's another one of those dual author ones, he's done something a little bit similar, but let's find out first. I better introduce him, haven't I? Because on the show today, I'm getting lost here before we've even started. On the show today, I have the one and only Paul Donsback. Donsback. Hi, Paul. How you doing?
Hi, Barry. Thank you for inviting me on the show.
It's a pleasure to have you on the show. As I said there, it was... Well, you and your co-author were actually working on sort of separate books, weren't you? And then ending up working together.
Yes, we sure were. And we didn't expect to do this, but we were in a writer's workshop, and the host thought we should be working together. So we drove it around the block, so to speak, and ended up writing a book together.
Because, you know, this is your first sort of published book. I mean, you have done, you know, written bits and pieces and that before. But, of course, like we say, and we've had a glut of them over the last few years, is people from the legal system turning into writing. And, you know, some people might say it's because half the time they're telling stories in the courts anyway. But we're not going to say that. But, I mean, because that's where, you know, you sort of come from that side of the legal stuff and that, and what directed you into actually start writing?
I think driving is the right term. After myself, 30 years in the legal world of fiction, it was not a great leap to go off into the fiction world itself. And I think Aaliyah, my co-author, had a similar experience.
Yeah, that's interesting, because it's either lawyers or doctors, it seems to be lately, that go into the writing area. And, you know, as you said, it is that sort of fictional world in a way. So, but you were into this, as you said, you sort of went to this sort of writing workshop and ended up with Aaliyah. And I guess it just clicked, did it, the whole idea and you know, how it produced, etc.
We thought this would be a really difficult process, and we thought the host was a little crazy to suggest two people with really different backgrounds to write a novel together. But that turned out to be where the magic was. Mm. Our differences really became our strengths, and she does things with my writing, and I do things with hers that we think make them each very much stronger.
That's interesting, because, you know, when we've had sort of dual authors on the show before, and we've been running the show for about 10 years now. God, that long, is it? Yeah, I suppose it must be. And one of the things are that sometimes people do a chapter each. You know, one does one and one does the other, and then they sort of swap over sort of thing, almost like from different points of view. And others, it's a case of one does the chapter and then the other one puts their view on it, and, you know, between the two discussion, you sort of massage into one. It sounds like you did that latter when you created your books.
It's so interesting to me as a man, because I've all my life thought I understood women, and so our writing is pretty balanced, except when it comes to writing about our female characters. That all goes out the window when I send something as a suggestion to Aaliyah. She just rips it into shreds if it has to do with a woman, and she very politely, patiently tells me why I don't understand women, and so it's been a very humbling experience that way.
Well, I think it was last week I was somewhere, and somebody said to me, he didn't understand women. He said, there's a woman who takes hours and goes through huge amount of pain plucking their eyebrows out, only to pencil them back in again. Yeah, which is true when you think about it.
How can we try that?
I know. Because it's his historical, but it's adventure, and it does have a bit of romance in. Now, who was the one who did the romance stuff?
Well, we both did, but my suggestions being heavily edited as it pertained to our female lead. We have a protagonist who is a lawyer, and Aaliyah graduated from law school, so she's a lawyer too. Mm-hmm. So we have some insights there. And his love interest is a reporter, so they come at things from similar ways, but a bit like Aaliyah and myself personally. They have their differences, and we think it makes for an interesting romance in this book. Aaliyah's married in real life, has a couple of kids and a great husband, and I'm single. So again, we have a lot of differences that we think make strengths as writers working together.
Because it's based on a sort of a real thing, and let's it's the Bronze Scroll is the name of his first book, and it's part of the series called Knights of the Lost Temple Adventure, which we'll get to in a minute about that. But it's actually based round a true happening, as in the Dead Sea Scrolls.
We initially felt like such failures. What we set out to do with our story, and we thought it was a great idea, was find the world's most impossible mystery and make that the backstory. And so the way this worked, we researched it, we looked into what's the most difficult ancient mystery. And what we found out was there's this thing called the Copper Scroll that's found in a Dead Sea cave. And it's a treasure map, supposedly to hundreds of tons of gold and silver. And so we knew we would never figure that out. Our characters weren't going to do that. But that's exactly what we think happened. As we were writing our stories, some of these clues actually seemed to make some sense, and we think we made a little progress in solving this mystery.
Great, because even though it's called the Copper Scroll, it's actually not made of copper, is it? Hence the title, I guess, of the book. It's bronze.
And that's what we think we've learned as writers, is nothing is ever as it seems. And as we began to tell that story, we realized this thing was made of bronze, and that was actually part of the mystery.
Yeah.
There's some meaning to that and everything else in this very, very strange treasure map. Turns out to have a lot of hidden meanings in it.
Indeed. Well, I said about, the first of a series. When you started off, was the idea just to sort of do the one book of the series, and a one book thing? And as you went in, you think, hey, we can make a series out of this.
We started out early deciding to like this series because we spent a lot of time talking about the characters and what they could do. And we realized that this would be something that would take at least a few books.
Yeah,
and the way we kind of organized it is each book explores a different spiritual tradition in the world, which is what we wanted to do as writers, was have some fun exploring these things and try to understand ourselves and our world a little better.
And indeed, one of the things I think you set out to do is to show that ordinary people can do this sort of stuff. Can do these sort of, make these feats and friendship and the inspiration, whether it's fact, history, or what have you. And history teaches you that people can do this, and I think that's one of the things you set out to do within the book.
We feel that we've made a lot of progress with that, and this is, as we're learning, the great spiritual teachers have always said exactly that, that every human being has that ability to understand the spiritual and what lies around us, the unseen, and so that's something we think we're learning, and how to access that, and what all of these traditions are about.
Right, and I know you, both yourself and Aaliyah, have done a lot of traveling. Has that sort of helped when you sort of looked into, you know, when you were writing the book?
Yes, and actually, I'm speaking to you from Israel today.
Oh, right.
The country's just recently opened up, and that's part of what we wanted to do, and we're doing, is each of us has gone on some travel, and I'm abroad now, and being in these places is a way of getting a deeper understanding of what other people's traditions are about, and how they understand and relate to the universe, as we all say nowadays.
And you can see from, you know, TV things like Oak Island and stuff like that, that people love a mystery story where you have to try and work things out. And I remember being at work when it first started, and we used to sort of, you know, if we were sort of at the end of a meeting, said, "Did you see last night's program? What do you think? I think it's this one. I think that, you know, it could have been the Chinese got here first or something like that." You know, and I'm sure that's what they do when they read your books.
One of the things that surprised me is how many mysteries there really are once you start asking question. And
yeah,
people are so happy to help you. I spent a few days out in the desert here with a tour guide, and he showed me these amazing, deep, hundreds of feet deep stairways to nowhere, dug in the desert 2,000 years ago, and nobody has the slightest idea why somebody would build stairways that go to nothing.
Yeah.
So we went in there, and we're looking around, and I remain puzzled, but I'll talk to Aaliyah, and maybe she'll figure it out.
Right. It's interesting. A friend of mine back home in England, from the rugby club, in fact, he has been writing for about 10 years now, and he's got the whole sort of thing about the fact that Harold did not die at the Battle of Hastings, because the only sort of pictorial thing is on the Bayeux Tapestry, and of course there's a couple of panels that are missing and everything like that, and they've sort of possibly thought, you know, now think he was sort of let go, became a hermit, and is actually buried in Waltham Abbey, if I remember right. But you know, it and he's got the people who discovered Richard III's body under that car park sort of now working with him to do the whole sort of investigation and possibly open up this this burial in Waltham Abbey if they get the permission. But we history is quite often passed down centuries even later. You know, there's no sort of actual recorded what happened at the time. It's hearsay half the time. And, you know, we're led to believe that, just like the whole, you know, who discovered America, and you've got walls from the Chinese, you've even got Marco Polo might have come here, of course you've got the Vikings, you've got you've got the Scots, you've got the Welsh tribes up in the north of America, and all sorts of stuff, and we just don't know. And it, as you say, it gives a writer a huge amount of options that they can sort of take something like you have and manipulate it into a great story that's going to have people thinking, you know, and who's to say it's not totally true.
There seems to be a convergence in so many ways that the science, the archaeology, is to many people's surprise proving that a lot of those ancient stories were true.
Yeah.
I don't know about King Arthur and some of those, but
yeah,
but a lot of these, King Solomon, King David, a lot of these turn out to be proved when the archaeologist finds their name on a tomb or an ancient document and digs it out of the ground.
Yeah, I mean, Arthur was most likely just a minor chieftain down in the sort of southwest of England. In fact, it's the Victorians that sort of made it into like a Middle Ages stuff, where it was obviously sort of Saxon type stuff before then. But anyway, but you're right. It's the things there, and the more you look into these things, I mean, you know, yourself, you obviously, you know, you, the two of you looked into this, the more is it true? Could it happen? Is it there? I'm starting, as you said, you started to understand perhaps a few things that people said people couldn't understand. And who's to say?
And you would never expect that there'd be hundreds of tons of gold or silver in the desert. And we don't think there is, but we think there are some stories that this copper scroll seems to say, and that's what we explore in the book. And we would enjoy very much if readers who look at the book have other ideas about these things. But there's really, I think, an interesting backstory for this document that was found in a Dead Sea cave.
Right, and of course, the bronze scroll is the first of the series of the Knights of the Lost Temple. Have you started on the second book?
Yes, and that was my last trip before this one. Is I went out to Egypt and Greece to do some groundwork, if you will, in some caves and other places for our second book, which is we've entitled The Last Pharaoh, and it involves some things that happened in Egypt and Greece and other interesting places that were a great excuse for a trip.
Right. Yeah. Any excuse for a trip, right? Indeed. How have you sort of said, is it going to be a trilogy, or do you think you're going to be able to keep going on this for a little while?
We've gotten really excited about it, and there's so many more legends and mysteries we want to explore, so we've decided on 7 books, and so it's going to take us a few years, probably about every 6 or 9 months, we hope to have a new book out.
That's
so we're
great.
To next summer for the next book.
That's good. That's very good. One thing I always ask people, especially with who've just come out with their debut books, a lot of authors, first-time authors, come on the show and stuff like that, and they think that once the book's printed, they've written and it's printed and it's there in their hand, that's all the hard work's finished. I keep telling them it's not. That's when the hard work starts. Did you find that?
It actually, to us, feels more like play or just having fun. Doing this.
Yeah.
Having the opportunity to be on your show and talk about the book is really a pleasure. And it's these different aspects of being in the book world, if you will, are just lots of fun. And so we are back to writing, and that feels good too, especially coming back and getting to sort of talk to our characters in lots of ways is very rewarding.
Well, indeed, and this is one of the other things I always say is, if people about the characters lead you don't have a huge amount to say. I suppose in historical type things you've got a target, but the characters, and I reckon 90% of the people I've had on the show would agree with this, the characters lead you. If they want to talk to you get on with it and follow them. But if they don't, that's people, that's writer's block. That's because they don't want to talk to you that day, because perhaps you ignored them the day before. Some want, have minor roles. They want major roles. So, there was a lady who, and I've told the people on the show this before, about she'd written about 20 historical romance books. And she's quite a well-known publisher, came on the show. And we were talking about this sort of thing about, the characters lead you on and etc. And she said the book she'd just written tried to kill this character off 7 times, and the character wouldn't die. She had to rewrite the whole plot because this character would not die. And it happens.
It's sometimes a little embarrassing how real they seem. I don't always admit that, but we felt like when we started the book, we were auditioning characters
yes!
that were already real.
Yes, yes.
And just wanted to find out who would fit in our book. And, then the next step is just getting to know them and as if they already exist.
Well, the worry I have is that they're actually in a parallel universe. And we're just the conduit that puts their story into our universe. And I'm worried that one day, if you don't listen to them, there'll be a knock on your front door, and these people will be there. Look, we've had to come for our universe to yours because you're not listening to us. It could be that bad.
And then there's those days where you pick up the phone and it seems to be for a moment one of your characters speaking to you.
Yeah.
They announce their name and you think, oh no.
It's them.
You're not real.
Them. I know. I mean, and it's interesting what you said about the sort of enjoyment of doing the chat shows and stuff like that, because that's how I actually started doing the chat shows. Was I was on a few chat shows with my books some of the people were terrible, and I thought, oh my God, I'm having to lead this person who's meant to be running the show. I thought, well, I enjoy a good chat, so I'll try it out. So I tried it out, and it must be 11, 12 years ago now, and my writing hasn't really got any further, but I've done a lot of shows, should I say.
That's a lot of what life teaches you, is there are wonderful people out there doing things, but ultimately, we're all amateurs. So there's why not try it? Write a book, do a radio show, just find something you love.
Always,
feel good.
Yeah, you've always got to have a go at it, no matter what. I mean, so if people come up, I know when I was just doing book signing and stuff like that, people used to come up and say, oh, yeah, I've got a story, I just don't know how to start, you know, people wouldn't believe my story and stuff like that. And you say, well, you know, do you write letters? And in those days people did it, and these days it's at schools, and you say, well, do you have a blog, or you know, do your text and stuff like that? And a lot of the kids do, and I said, well, you've already started, you're already telling people stuff, you know, it's just a case of expanding from there. So how long's the book been out?
It came out in August.
August 11th. Right, I've just seen that. Yep.
Yes. Yes, exactly.
What sort of response have you received so far?
Well, I've been on a few shows like yours, and we've had a few book reviews, which were very kind, which is one of the great joys, I think, of being in the writing world, is having others who enjoy your book. Mm-hmm. And so we're hearing some feedback from readers as well. As first-time authors, we have modest expectations for this first book as to how many people will reach. But we have great ambitions for the series and are learning this craft. And I think we're very excited about the second book coming out and adding some depth to our series.
That's very, very good that you sort of look at it in that way, because that's what happens. You know, the first one, you might get a few people. The second one comes out, oh, so-and-so told me about that book. Perhaps I'll read that in a few more. And then by the time the third one comes out, you know, you've got a bit of a following. And people pick up, oh, I better read the first two, that, you know, these other ones that come out that these people have written. And that's how it builds up. It very rarely happens overnight success. So I have met a couple of people who had it like that, but it's quite often it takes two or three, and then your name gets out there, and that's the thing.
And we're making progress solving that second mystery, so we think we might get a little bit of attention if that happens, because some of these things are big stories in the ancient world, so thinking the series might get some attention that way, but we'll see how that goes.
Well, I'm sure it will. But it's been great chatting to you, Paul, but time is starting to get on. So what I'm going to do is hand the show over to you so you can tell everybody where they can find more about your book and yourself and, of course, Aaliyah.
Thank you, Barry. Our book is Knights of the Lost Temple, Book 1, The Bronze Scroll, or you can find it just as The Bronze Scroll, and it's available on Amazon, Google Books, in local bookstores, national, international bookstores, My name is Paul Donsbach. My co-author is Aaliyah Sina. We really appreciate being on the show, Barry. It's been a lot of fun, and thank you for letting me talk about our book.
It's a great pleasure, and good luck with the book. And perhaps when the next one comes out, you'll come back and chat to us again.
I would greatly enjoy that. So thank you again, Barry.
My pleasure. Thank you. Well, there you go. My guest today. Hey, how about that? Paul Donsbach. And with Aaliyah Sina, they've written what is the first of a series. And it looks like it's going to be a great series. The sort of stuff I like, you know. You should know that by now on this show. But it's the series is The Knights of the Lost Temple. And this first book is called The Bronze Scroll. And as we've been discussing, very interesting historical things. And as you read in it, perhaps you are really solving some of the mysteries. Because as Paul said, you know, they start to understand some of the stuff that other people perhaps haven't. I love that sort of thing. Yes, I do. Anyway, that's it for now. I will be back on the show on Sunday. As normal with my two music shows, between 5 and 6 p.m. Eastern, we have Those Were the Days. And the theme this week is the second group of shows with a theme of autumn. So have a think what you can fit into that, bits of music from the 20th century. And then straight after that, between 6 and 7 p.m. Eastern, we have the Swinging 60s, music from the 60s. And on the A to Z, or A to Z, as you Americans would say, of the groups and singers from the 60s, we are currently up to the letter S, S for sugar. So have a think. Always try and get the first five as ones you won't guess, and then we'll pick up stuff, yeah, the searchers, you know, seekers. Yeah, you know the sort of ones I mean. Anyway, that will be me on Sunday. And, of course, next Tuesday and Wednesday, I'll be back here on A Book and a Chat with a couple of fresh guests. But until then, as always, we have one thing left to say. Don't forget...